Before we begin today's program, I want to acknowledge that the conversation you're about to hear contains discussion of traumatic historical events, including massacres, the Stolen Generations, and violence against First Nations peoples.
Welcome to Speaking Out.
We're mainly discussing land rights and economic empowerment.
Aboriginal enterprises in mining, exploration,
and energy. I'd like to talk a little bit about Indigenous constitutional recognition, those.
With Larissa Behrendt.
It's a fresh view coming
on ABC Radio.
I think the rise of smaller micro channels like social media, new media platforms like podcasts have really challenged traditional media and made people rethink about where audiences are and what they want to hear. And I think it's made everyone think about how we make the news more conversational and how we make it more useful to people, because in this day and age, we're not competing with our fellow news outlets. We're competing with entertainment, Netflix, scrolling on social media. So how do you grab people's attention? Like, we are just in this desperate fight for attention, and there's more out there than ever. So it's almost harder to grab people's attention. So the challenge for, you know, like myself on a radio show, is how do you make it interesting to people who can switch off at any moment and just get the same news on their phone?
Isabella Higgins on reporting in war zones, the future of Indigenous affairs, and her new role at the ABC. This is Speaking Out. I'm Larissa Behrendt. One of the most rewarding things about being host of this program is having the chance to sit down with some of our most inspirational and influential people, particularly those who are continuing the art of storytelling, not just here in Australia, but across the world. Isabella Higgins is one of those inspirational and influential people. A Torres Strait Islander woman and a Walkley Award-winning journalist, she has been at the ABC for more than a decade. She began her career as a digital reporter in Brisbane before making her way to Rockhampton, where she had the opportunity to hone her journalism skills reporting on regional issues. This led her to Canberra, where she had a stint as a reporter in the Parliament House Bureau, which changed the trajectory of her career. From Parliament, she took on a role with the ABC's Indigenous Affairs team, where she covered some of the most important issues facing Indigenous people and communities. In 2019, she won her first Walkley following her impactful reporting on the First Nations suicide crisis, earning her the Award for Young Australian Journalist of the Year. Her career only went further as Indigenous Affairs correspondent before going on to become the first Torres Strait Islander to be the ABC's Europe correspondent. That role saw her report on the war in Ukraine, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Isabella's passion for storytelling and highly regarded professionalism saw her recently announced as presenter of Radio National's current affairs program, AM, replacing Sabra Lane, who had been in the position for almost a decade. Isabella Higgins, welcome back to Speaking Out.
Oh, thanks, Larissa. Always great to be chatting to you. And, you know, I'm a big fan of this program.
Well, we're a big fan of you. So it's really great to use your new role as an opportunity to dig back into the things that you've achieved to date. But let's start where it all began. Can you describe your upbringing? Where did you grow up and what were your big influences?
Yeah, I feel like it was an ordinary and extraordinary childhood all at once. It was ordinary in the sense that it was just sort of set in suburban Brisbane, a pretty unremarkable landscape. There weren't really people around me doing particularly interesting things, but extraordinary in the fact that I just have such an incredible, strong, large family. And I feel like that's really been the gift in my life, this big Torres Strait Islander family. My family really have been on the mainland for a long time now. A very common story amongst Torres Strait Islanders where they came to the mainland for jobs, health reasons, family reasons, but they did really maintain that pride, connection, and I always felt it growing up. My grandma was one of 13, my grandfather was one of 12, so you can imagine how big Christmases were.
Sure, cousins by the dozen.
Yeah, by the dozen, and no one is short of personality, no one is short of spirit. It's hard to get a word in, but that feeling of loudness, fullness, so much love, really feeling like you belong. I now realize not everyone gets that. And even when I went back home for Christmas this year, I realized this has been one of the gifts in my life. I was the oldest of four in my immediate family. So I feel like it's a strong line of matriarchal eldest daughter energy, very much.
I love that too. And I love the reflection that we don't realize when we're growing up, but when we're so grounded in family and culture that actually it's a privilege when you go out that you do actually realize as you get older that it has been a really important gift to
totally
to have had that connection.
You get such a strength and such a grounding. And to this day, when I go home and I'm surrounded by family, this career, this life of travel, interviewing high profile people, it doesn't matter to them at all. And I remember what my roots are, who I am, what my values are. And I'm extraordinarily grateful for that all the time. And I feel like I work in journalism. It's this fast-paced industry. You can get really stressed. You can take small details really seriously. But I do think it's the Islander upbringing that keeps me a little bit less stressed than other people. I remember not to sweat the small stuff. And I very much attribute that to my family background.
The ability to tell impactful stories, the aspiration to become a storyteller, can find us in really unexpected ways. But at what age did you realise that you had this unique talent, that was a skill that you wanted to explore?
I feel like I always was writing, talking from very early on. I think I said I wanted to be an artist or an author, so I was attracted to a lot of means of expression, as many oldest children are. You know, they like talking, they like getting attention, stealing it from their younger siblings. So I feel like from a very young age, I was always doing that, just in the ways that kids do. And as I grew up, I don't think I really knew what a journalist was, but it seemed interesting. Not a lot of my family members have been to university. So I remember Mum and I going off to the university open day when I was in grade 12, looking at all the stalls. And it was really Mum who picked it out for me and said, I think you'd be really good at that. I think that'll suit your interests. And I don't think either of us knew what it looked like, but I just kind of gave it a punt. And I still can't really believe I've ended up here in this job and have been able to travel the world with journalism. But I think from a very early age, I always wanted to tell stories. I think back then I thought I'd maybe be an author or something like that, which I would still like to do. I'd still like to write a book.
Well, good on Mum.
Yeah, good. She knew what I needed.
And then while you were studying, especially because you weren't really sure what journalism was, what were your first impressions as a young First Nations person? Because obviously it would have been, you know, still a space where, you know, we're able to express ourselves, but it hasn't always been kind in its coverage of First Nations people.
And I mean, to be honest, Larissa, it took me a while to fall in love with this job and to fall in love with this industry, which I am now. I really love this job and I'm so proud of it and feel really grateful for it. But I remember coming in as a young person and feeling like I didn't fit in. I didn't feel like my personality matched. I felt like I wasn't ambitious enough, driven enough, that I couldn't care as much as everyone else. And I think really what it was is I'd come from a family where, you know, there was real life and death matters going on all the time. So stressing about story deadlines, I thought, we'll be fine here, we'll sort this out. And a lot of the newsrooms were predominantly white, very middle class, didn't necessarily feel like I was represented or fit in. And the first few years were pretty hard. I did feel like a fish out of water for a long time and really questioned if I had what it took to make it. But there was something there that I loved, the thrill, the rush. And the thing I love about this job to this day is you kind of get this peek behind the curtain in so many aspects of the world. You get to meet ordinary and extraordinary people who have defied the odds. You get to see how politics works, sports work. You get the behind the scenes look at things, and that is so fascinating. And I think early on I liked that element of it, but I didn't know if it was going to work out.
Well, it's certainly working out, and we will we will start unpacking the many things you've achieved on that journey. But you started working with the ABC in 2014 in Brisbane and then Rockhampton. What were some of the differences you observed working in a capital city newsroom and a regional newsroom?
Oh, I mean, my time working in Rockhampton is still some of my favourite journalistic memories. I've got family in Rockhampton, but I really actually hadn't spent that much time there. And I remember arriving in town on a Sunday afternoon. It was raining. All the shops were shut. And I just thought, what have I done? Like, I've moved here. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to like this. What's going on? But it made me be really open-minded and learn a lot about a lot of different things. Like, I now know more than I'd like to about bull castration or, you know, chickpea cropping or these kind of interesting industries that are really large up there. So I had to learn a lot about agriculture, mining, you know, things that I wasn't necessarily interested in, but it broadens your knowledge. It gives you a better insight into how other people live their lives around Australia. And I think that's really important because I think if you live in a city for a long time, you can lose understanding of what life is like in the bush. And when I was in Rockhampton too, I think I really did find my passion for Indigenous affairs reporting. I don't think I necessarily knew that that was what I wanted to do in this career, but became quite close with some people in Woorabinda, developed some close contacts in that community and did work I was really proud of and realised, oh, reporting on our mob, our community, our issues, this really is fulfilling. And I think this is something that I want to keep doing. And I think when I was unsure if this was for me, it was finding that passion in the industry that kept me going for many years.
It's really interesting. I think one of the things I think is really strong about the way you've approached your career is you did start sort of doing, you know, the sort of general rounds of journalism and then really found your talent and passion for telling stories about Indigenous Australia, as opposed to many people who think that's where I want to start and I might branch out.
Yeah, I mean, I started down at the local courthouse, you know, reporting on car crashes or going to council meetings or state government press conferences and really getting the broad spectrum of it. But it was finding the passion for telling our mob stories. And I think it probably came from, because I was in this general newsroom, realising there wasn't a great understanding of our people, that our stories weren't told well all the time, that they were told through a certain lens that didn't represent us very well, that it didn't capture our diversity or our strength or our talents. And I think that was what really motivated me.
Did you have much pushback when you did try and reframe those stories? It's been such a strong criticism of journalism about its deficit modelling, it's the negative stereotypes that come through consciously or unconsciously in the way stories are reported about us. And so, you know, was there a kind of pushback when you wanted to take a very different approach to that?
I think there was pushback just to do these stories at all. It was hard to get these kinds of stories up because these were newsrooms of mostly white people who thought that these stories didn't perform or were maybe worthy but weren't going to attract large audiences. So even before you got to the how we tell it, it was getting it commissioned. That was the hardest challenge. And I feel like the ABC is so different now to what it was when I started. And I think I'm really proud of how far we've come. We're not perfect, but there's a much better institutional understanding and a much better understanding of things like deficit narratives. So it was a really slow burn. It was like, first of all, just trying to get our stories commissioned. And I think I was always trying to make them more visually interesting, better written, you know, make them feel a cut above everything else just to prove they belonged, and was always thinking, like, how can we get the biggest audience for this? Because that was the way we were going to prove to editors that this was worthwhile and it mattered. And I still believe our stories are some of the best Australian stories. So full of emotion, so full of heart, full of struggle, people overcoming struggle. And it was just about convincing people that that was important, not just important, but really interesting, and was giving us the opportunity to rewrite the narrative and rewrite the story of Australia. And I am proud of, I think, when I look back on my career, maybe some of the changes I've made on the inside as well to people's perceptions of our stories, because it wasn't easy and I was still young and got burnt out easily, was disillusioned, would get really down sometimes about letting community down, not being able to tell a story the way I wanted to, you know, fighting with editors about which grab is going to close the story or who's included or explaining why that's going to be problematic. And it was really difficult, but I'm proud. And I should also shout out Bridget Brennan, who's, of course, our News Breakfast host, but we worked together very closely for a couple of years. And the work we did together, I think, will always be some of my proudest work.
I want to dig into that a little bit more, but it's great to just take a moment to acknowledge the groundbreaking work that journalists like yourself, like Bridget Brennan, Lorena Allam have done. When we talk about how different it is to be in the ABC now, that did not come easily, and it was really pushed by the First Nations staff, Philippa McDermott, her leadership, which we've spoken about at other times. But I wonder, just thinking back before we move into some other places where you've made an impact in your career, when you look back now at what was really difficult at those times but also what was rewarding, what's the sort of advice you give to young First Nations people or people looking to go into journalism at a later age? What would be your advice to them?
It's not going to be easy, but it will be amazing, is what I would say. You will have a lot of struggles at every step of the way, but you are going to have some huge wins that are life-affirming, career-affirming, that make you feel like you're exactly where you need to be, and you're going to feel so privileged at what people trust you to share with the world, and never lose sight of that when you're doing this, because there's 101 reasons why it will all feel too hard. You will carry a big weight on your shoulders, but never lose sight of the why and never lose sight of the fact that people are trusting you with some of the most important information they carry. And because of you, that information can be on the public record. So never lose sight of the why.
I think that sounds like good advice for anyone at any age and any stage of their career. The other thing I just wanted to get your reflections on, you mentioned your time working within the ABC's Indigenous Affairs team. When you look back on that, what are some of the stories or moments that have really stayed with you, some of the things that you're proudest of?
Oh, I think for sure some of the work I did with another one of my colleagues, Sarah Collard, reporting on missing and murdered Indigenous women. You know, since then, our colleagues like Bridget and Suzanne Dredge have done a Four Corners on it. But at the time that we were doing it, I think it was back in 2018 maybe, we could feel that this was a big issue. We could see conversations happening over in North America about this sort of thing. And we pitched it all around the ABC. We were trying to get a good time slot for this really important story. We were talking to families and people didn't understand the importance of it. And we tried so hard to make it the best story we could with the time that we were given. And I'm still so proud of it. I'm still so touched by the stories of the women who spoke to us about losing loved ones in such an awful way and never having answers. But I do feel like that story started a conversation in Australia that led to a Senate inquiry, that led to further coverage. I don't think it's a conversation that's over. But the fight to get that story up, it took months and months and months. I'm very proud of it. I think other memories, I have some other work I did with Bridget on remote housing and water quality in remote communities in the Northern Territory. I think that conversation has moved on so much in 10 years. There's now legal challenges, precedents, governments needing to take action on things that were just sort of considered acceptable. And the people we met in those places who were scared, afraid to talk up, felt like they could lose their homes, their security, their anonymity, who had everything to lose but trusted us to help them make the difference they wanted for their community. They stay with me all the time. And just some of those magic moments out in the bush where things fall apart or things go wrong or, you know, there's no toilet, there's no food, there's no water, you're so uncomfortable, but you just think, we've just got to get this interview done.
I just want to note that in 2019, you were awarded Young Journalist of the Year for your coverage of the First Nations suicide crisis. How was that moment for you, getting some recognition for what was really difficult and hard work?
That was the stories I did on Indigenous suicide were really difficult that I still think about. All of the families I interviewed and just the enormity of that loss quite often and the pure grief and emotion that had gripped those families. And I've always felt like, well, I felt like I didn't have the right to be sad about experiencing these things because I wasn't the one who had directly felt it or was directly dealing with this loss. And I think it took me many years to understand what vicarious trauma was and why this work felt so heavy and why it was hard to sleep at night after doing some of these things. So getting some industry recognition, it was nice for sure. Like it absolutely, but it's definitely not why I do this work. And I'm just glad that those stories are on the public record. And like, it is disappointing to think that that is still a conversation that's ongoing. There are still a lot of things we could do to change the outcomes for young First Nations people. It's still a problem and we've got to keep reporting on it.
That's the first part of my conversation with award-winning journalist Isabella Higgins. She represents a growing cohort of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are taking our stories to the world.
You're listening to Speaking Out.
It just comes down to showing, sharing, you know, respecting
the world from an Indigenous perspective on ABC Radio.
This is Speaking Out. I'm Larissa Berendt. My guest this week was recently announced as the presenter of Radio National's current affairs program, AM. Isabella Higgins has been a journalist for more than a decade and covered some of the most important stories both in Australia and internationally. Her time spent as the ABC's Europe correspondent saw her cover major news items such as the war in Ukraine, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Prior to that, she was our Indigenous Affairs correspondent, covering the major issues impacting First Nations people.
I'm a sin till pride emancipate mental slavery. And they said we were failing time. Showed them up, we stood the test of time. Time, I blame it on time, but regained it on time. So I claim it on time. Put soul in this image. This is music for the free spirit. Inspiration for those who really need it. Not those who listen, but those who really feel it.
Songs of our time, teachers of our story.
Survival of a culture is the reason that we made it. Yeah.
Spirit ties, keepers of our story.
And the show will go on. Worship, burn, punks, we came to tell the world.
Yeah.
language of a mother to a son. Rituals since time begun. The circle of life is never broken. My ancestors of time have spoken. Free the slave of your mind, get open. A manuscript for a future, here's to hoping. Let it breathe just a little bit. Hey world, believe just a little bit. And if you can see in an etiquette of respect, birth to peace becomes relevant. But that concept alone is irrelevant. True ambition, such tests are heaven sent. That's why we grab mics and go ridiculous and scream represent till the whole world be feeling it. Yeah.
Songs of our time, teachers of our story.
Let it be written in the maze. The survival of a culture is a reason that we made it. Yeah.
Spirit.
That's music from Mau Power featuring the late Uncle Archie Roach. The song is called Freedom and highlights the survival and continuity of Indigenous community and culture. It's one of my favourites. I'm joined this week by journalist Isabella Higgins. Isabella was recently appointed presenter of ABC Radio National's current affairs program, AM. I just want to dig into something you said there that I think is really important. I feel this as a lawyer as well when I'm dealing with clients who have a lot of trauma and think, oh, I don't have a right to feel anything about it because they're the ones who have to live that life and what is it to me? But you do carry it, as you say, there is a thing called vicarious trauma. Mm. And I wonder how it was when you were working in doing so many important stories on so many really difficult issues and really doing it in a way where you were meeting the real face of it. The people, they weren't statistics, you were there actually talking to people and hearing that pain and that grief. And I wonder how you protected yourself from that, how you stayed strong and how you did support yourself while you were experiencing that vicarious trauma.
Yeah, and I mean, I just want to pick up on what you said. I always felt like you had to humanize these stories. It was not good enough if we treated them as there were stats and presented them to Australia as if these were just sad statistics. It's like, these are families, these are mums, sisters, brothers who are grieving, who have lost everything. These are young lives that don't get to be fulfilled. This is what we're losing. It's not, you know, numbers that are rising. I don't think I did a good job of protecting myself, to be honest. For many years, I think I would lie awake at night and just think about everyone I felt like I'd let down or, you know, not delivered the perfect story or not got enough, you know, a big enough audience for their stories. And after I was Indigenous Affairs correspondent, I went and became the Europe correspondent for the ABC for a while and reported in Ukraine at the start of the Ukraine war. That was another time where, again, I just felt like, oh my gosh, you don't even realize how privileged you are. Like at the end of this, you get to leave and like, look at what other people are having to deal with. Their whole world has been turned upside down. And in a way, I think what helped me deal with the trauma of all of that was the perspective that you gain about all the things we take for granted in our lives and having family, having safety, having security, being able to call your loved ones when you feel like that. That is a gift and a privilege that not everyone else has. So I think it was, instead of feeling like I was burdened, it was always trying to think, but what have you learned from this about what's so special about your own life, about all the things that you have that you take for granted? And I think it is a really hard thing to deal with vicarious trauma. I'm still trying to learn all the time. And for me, it's just trying to have as much perspective as possible and maybe just giving yourself a bit of grace too. Like I'd often find it quite hard to come home to my own life and take myself seriously or be around my friends or my family because everything seemed so frivolous compared to the struggles of the people I had been interviewing. And I could almost become resentful of the people around me because I'm like, you don't understand how good you have it. And so it's having grace for them, but for yourself that sometimes you are down, you're processing, and you've got to let yourself do that. Or it's going to catch up with you when you don't want it to or when you least expect it. But it's a work in progress for me, for sure. And I think that the thing I've really learned is for all the sad stories you do, try and do some happy ones. Try and do some positive ones that make you believe in, you know, the spirit of our young people, the goodness that exists in the world, something that lifts you up.
You've mentioned your pivot from Indigenous Affairs reporter to the ABC's Europe correspondent. Was it a difficult decision to step away from Indigenous Affairs reporting?
Yeah, for sure. Because I just wondered, am I ever going to feel this passion? But at the same time, it felt very heavy at that time. And I was feeling like, I don't know how long I can do this for because none of this is transactional. All of this matters to me. I care so much about what happens to everyone. And I had a sense that I needed a change, but also becoming the Europe correspondent, I was like, okay, well, that's not going to be easy, is it? It's not really like taking a working holiday or taking a break. But I was just excited at the opportunity to report overseas. And I'm really thankful for the managers who believed in me because I actually didn't put my name forward for that position. I had to be tapped and encouraged to apply for it. And the first time I was encouraged, I was like, no, I can't do that. So there's been some really great managers along the way who've kind of helped me take the next step in my career. Like now I'm hosting a radio show and I wouldn't have put myself forward for that, but I've had managers who've pushed me towards it. So maybe sometimes it's not always your own wisdom, but it's having the right people around you.
I think that's it's a life experience that resonates with many of us. I have to say, though, it was a very exciting moment for me. I remember when you were announced as the Europe correspondent to see a First Nations person go into that role was in many ways groundbreaking. Did you get a sense of what it might mean for Mob to see you do that?
No, I don't think I did at all when I took that on.
Well, take it from me. We were all very impressed and pleased.
I do remember getting some really nice messages when I was on the ground in Ukraine from people being like, what do you mean a black fella's over there covering it? And that was nice, you know, and it was nice to know that people at home were watching.
And you break barriers and you break expectations that we can only cover our own stories.
Yeah, totally. And I think you also bring a compassion and a knowledge and understanding of what it's like to be from a minority, what it's like to, you know, not feel like you've got total freedom in your own country. There's a lot of shared experiences with a lot of communities around the world, even though it's a different language or a different part of the world. I did some reporting in the Caribbean about reparations, and it just shocked me so much how much shared language we had about some of these issues and how much that fight for identity, recognition, reconciliation is similar in so many parts of the world. This story of colonization has affected so many communities, but different places are dealing with it in different ways. So I feel like it's great to have that perspective.
Are there other highlights of stories that you covered during that time that were particularly meaningful or you couldn't believe you got to do?
I mean, Barbados was pretty cool. I was just like a part of the world that I never really expected to end up in. I was like, oh, it's Rihanna's home island. I'm an islander. Like, this is pretty cool. And it was cool to, we did a documentary actually looking at the reparations fight in Barbados, and it felt almost like home in some ways, like the kind of tropical island vibes, the relaxed nature of the people, but the passion and the fight within them. But it's on the other side of the world. Never really thought I'd end up there. That was really such a highlight. I went to Africa as well to do a story about exploitation in the flower industry, and the flowers that we often buy in Australia are picked through slave labor. And walking through villages in rural Kenya was like, how did I end up here, you know? Ukraine was an enormous privilege too. You know, that was like this life-changing experience to understand what it's like to question whether you will have safety tomorrow, whether your children can grow up with the values that you want to pass on. Understanding what it's like for your safety to be physically under threat day to day, and just being really touched by the humanity of people there, the warmth, the grace, the openness they had in their worst moments, and how appreciative they were to have their story being told in a place like Australia. They just wanted these stories on the public record. And I think it will just stay with me forever.
How did the experience of being overseas, I mean, I think being overseas, you always learn things about yourself.
Absolutely.
But, of course, you were seeing all these extraordinary things, meeting all these extraordinary people. How did it change you? What sort of impact did it have on you?
You know, in some ways, being overseas kind of cancelled out a lot of the noise. You know, in Australia, my identity means something and it can be quite charged, and being someone of a First Nations background, someone who's got mixed heritage, someone who shows up, who often I was the darkest person in the room. And then suddenly I'm in Europe and I have this level of anonymity I've never had before. People ask, where are you from? And you can say, I'm Australian, full stop, no questions asked. Mm. That was quite freeing, but it also gave me an opportunity to kind of reflect on my own blackness and whiteness. Like, I'd often be sitting on the tube in London and think, huh, like, I grew up thinking I was often being the darkest person in the room, and I'm looking around now and I'm the lightest person on this tube, you know, and reflecting on, yeah, really my mixed ancestry, because I do have some German ancestry as well. Like, it did really change my perspective on quite a lot of things. And just getting exposed to so many different histories, cultures, art, just sort of felt like it cracked my brain open and I could rebuild it with all these new things that I loved.
Did you find the adjustment coming back to Australia difficult?
More than I expected, to be honest. I mean, it felt so good to be home, and I constantly felt conflicted about being away from family, and, you know, people get sick or there's big things that you really wish you could be there. And you realise when you're living away from family that when times are tough, just being together is what matters, and you just want to be able to hug people or to sit next to someone. And when you're, you know, 24 hours away on a plane, you just can't do those kinds of things. So it felt great to be back around family. But after having such a monumental time in Europe where I was so driven by the news agenda, driven by delivering and serving for the Bureau, I did get back and just think, like, what am I doing with my, like, how do I get purpose? Like, what am I doing here? You know? And it took months to figure it out and to realize, you don't need to be doing something all the time, you know. Sometimes you can be a bit more still. And I think it was the combination of doing Indigenous affairs and foreign reporting. It was like, what is ever going to mean that much again in my professional life? And it's just been slowly recalibrating the expectations, I think.
It was so inspiring and wonderful to see you doing that international reporting and the sort of insights and humanity that you brought to it because of your perspective. But I have to say, it was also great to see you back here and seeing you do things like covering the 2025 election. Mm. Did you enjoy getting back into local national politics?
Yeah, I did. And I think I came back with a new perspective on the strength of our democracy, all of the safeguards Australia has in place to protect it, the good nature of Australians as well. Being in Europe, there often it was reporting on the rise of the far right, and then I came back and could kind of appreciate things like mandatory voting or preferential voting, like kind of things I'd never bothered to really think about, and look at how it preserves and shapes the Australia that we live in today. And just also, I think, bringing some of the international perspective too on these trends we're seeing with gender polarization, with generational polarization. They're happening overseas, but maybe not on the same scale in Australia. We might feel really divided in Australia, but perhaps it is less than some other Western democracies. And why is that? And so it was kind of interesting to probe those ideas.
And what were your reflections on where we were in terms of the national conversations around Indigenous people and their rights, particularly with the referendum and the result?
I mean, I actually came back from Europe to help cover the referendum and was back in Australia for 6 weeks to help all of the teams here report on that. I think in 2025, it was pretty stark how much Indigenous affairs were not the focus on a national level. And the impact of that referendum was actually the walking back of progress in some states as well. You know, if we think about the treaty process in Queensland or similar processes in the Northern Territory, different governments coming in and walking those back, and then looking at where the national conversation was going and realizing it wasn't really heading in any direction. It was people searching for the next solution. Maybe there's this focus on closing the gap, but that's quite difficult because it is really work that needs to be done at a community and state level, but it's a federal policy. So I think we're at an interesting and difficult point in Indigenous affairs at the moment where we're looking for what our next national leadership model might look like, what the sort of national united fight looks like and what we're moving towards. I was at GAMA this year and it did feel like a lot of the conversations were much more community based, looking at local problems. So I do think we're at an interesting point where we're kind of waiting maybe for a new generation of leaders to step forward with ideas to invigorate the space and help unite and push a lot of these difficult, entrenched issues forward?
Well, in a career that's already been stunning and successful and a joy to watch, very inspiring, you've recently taken on a new role as AM presenter here on the ABC. What are you looking forward to about that role and what made you decide to take it?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I never expected to do this. The AM presenting job, it has such a great legacy. But when I thought of it, it was such serious political journalists. And when they asked me, I was like, really? Me? Like, am I serious enough? Will the audience take me seriously enough?
Says the woman who covered the war in Ukraine.
I think that's the thing. Like, I still feel like, you know, the young girl from Queensland, which I guess leads me into what I would like to bring to the program is I just want to think about how our journalism can be useful to our audience and other people and not tell stories that matter to journalists, but tell stories that really matter to the everyday Australian. And when we're looking at politics and issues that might on the face of it feel boring or dry, how do we make this relevant? How do we make it useful for people so that they can understand why this matters and they can understand the issues? So I guess bringing maybe like a more explanatory approach to the program and bringing different voices in, obviously making sure we're covering Indigenous issues. I actually think the program does have a pretty good history of covering them, but I think there's always room for improvement too. And I think they're the goals for now, and just surviving the early mornings, probably.
I was going to ask you about that. It's quite a shift in the schedule.
It is, and I am a long-time night owl.
I was going to ask you, an early bird?
No, I have never been an early bird in my life. I've always wanted to be, but I'm just not. I like the night hours. I like burning the midnight oil. And now here I am with an alarm that goes off any time between 3:30 a.m. and 4 a.m., and I came back to the job after being on holidays. It was pretty tough that first week. But I try and think as well that my mum was a shift worker for much of my life, and she did these brutal hours while looking after lots of little kids. So there's a lot of people who have to do it to provide for their family. And happy to report the body clock is slowly shifting backwards, and bedtime is getting a little bit earlier, and I'm feeling a little bit less tired.
How are you finding the switch to the medium of radio? It's much more
intimate,
and it's a lot, you know, it's a lot less hassle. You just sort of turn up and turn the microphone.
It is nice not to be bothered by the logistics of TV, I must say, because a big part of being a foreign correspondent for TV was just spending all of your time, effort and energy trying to figure out how to get to a place, and then arriving there almost too exhausted to think. And there is this wonderful intimacy and immediacy with radio that I love. And it's really good to be back in the news and to be able to cover the big stories, but I'm doing it from the comfort of the Ultimo studio. I'm not hunched over an uncomfortable hotel desk in a weird part of the world, or tapping on a laptop in a gutter trying to make deadline. And I think you can feel the connection you have with your audience when you're doing radio, and that's really special. And I'm just looking forward to fostering that over the years to come and trying to deliver the high impact journalism that I think people expect from a program that's been around for a long time and has a real legacy.
I love doing radio for all those reasons you just said. And it surprised me when I started doing speaking out. This is my 10th year hosting the show.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I've just loved it as a way of being able to feel very intimate with the person I'm talking to and to the audience who feel like they're part of a conversation. And I hadn't appreciated it until I started actually making it, that that's what it gives you. But I think for those of us that wake up and listen to the radio in the morning, it's so lovely to hear a black fella tell us the news of the day. And, you know, not just the black fella news and what's on the black grapevine, but, you know, to give us a
we're
really
going to Iran today, we're going to Gaza.
You take us all around the world, even to the tricky spots. And it's really a wonderful development. I wonder, when you look back from where things were when you started in that newsroom in Brisbane to where they are now, and not just at the ABC, which you've reflected on, but more generally in terms of journalism and the media, what do you think have been some of the very positive developments, and where do you think we've still got some way to go?
I think the rise of smaller micro channels like social media, new media platforms like podcasts, have really challenged traditional media and made people rethink about where audiences are and what they want to hear. And I think it's made everyone think about how we make the news more conversational and how we make it more useful to people, because in this day and age, we're not competing with our fellow news outlets. We're competing with entertainment, Netflix, scrolling on social media. So how do you grab people's attention? Like, we are just in this desperate fight for attention, and there's more out there than ever, so it's almost harder to grab people's attention. So the challenge for, you know, like myself on a radio show, is how do you make it interesting to people who can switch off at any moment and just get the same news on their phone? And I think in some ways for traditional media outlets, we are in some ways more relevant than ever, because we have such rigorous editorial processes. Not all parts of the media, but particularly at the ABC, where we are public broadcasters, where we are so dedicated to delivering truth, balance, fairness, and in a world where there's so much noise, so much information, we've got to deliver that to the audience and continue to maintain that trust that they have in us, that we're going to tell them the truth and they can come here. They know it's not AI. They know it's not someone's opinion. It is just the facts. And that is almost harder to find than ever. And I think that's the real challenge for all of us. And when it comes, I think because we sort of democratize the news, you can choose who you want to listen to. So the challenge is making sure that we are representative and we have views of all people on our platforms. I don't think you can get away with just being a broadcaster of, you know, middle-class white men anymore. You've got to make sure you look like Australia, you sound like Australia, and that you're speaking to Australia. And that is the challenge, but also where we're growing, I think.
Isabella Higgins, thank you so much for the inspiration you've been to all of us in terms of the work you've done. Thank you for the way in which you've broadened our horizons of what's possible. And thank you so much for the humanity and compassion you bring to the way that you tell a story. And thank you so much for coming back and spending some more time with us on Speaking Out.
That is so generous. Thank you. I love this program and I'm always happy to come in and chat with you. Feels like chatting to a friend.
We're just down the hallway, yeah. So hopefully we can get you on through the year as things develop.
Both in radio land these days.
Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's my conversation with presenter of ABC Radio National's AM, Isabella Higgins. She takes on the role after more than a decade working in various senior reporting positions across the ABC. We wish Isabella all the best in her new role.
This is Speaking Out.
That's the key to it all, keeping connected to country.
On ABC Radio.
Before we finish up this week, I thought we'd make mention of the recent passing of former New South Wales Governor Dame Marie Beshear. Dame Marie was a lifelong supporter of First Nations rights and reconciliation, using her position both in her psychiatric career and as governor to advocate for Aboriginal self-determination. She listened to the voices of First Nations people and spoke up for their rights and aspirations. She leaves an indelible legacy and will be remembered as a staunch ally of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and I always enjoyed seeing her at community events in Redfern, where she was very much loved and admired. That's the show for now. Join us again next time for more stories from across Indigenous Australia. Speaking Out is produced by Janaea Gibbs-Muir. Our senior producer is Jay McAllister. And as always, you can find us on the ABC Listen app or on social media via ABC Indigenous, along with our titter show Away, hosted by the fabulous Rudy Bremer. I'm Larissa Berendt, and this is Speaking Out.